Yo, you're listening to Waiting on Reparations, a production of iHeartRadio.
Step towards me and I'll take a step backwards, cause I don't fight my haters, ain't worth the fucking hassle. I ask them to look past it and be mature about it. I'm passive, but that don't mean that I'm a fucking coward like Martin Luther, Mahatma Gandhi. I use my words to settle my conflicts rather than try to shoot you. Be cool, bro, cause I'd rather stand beside you than deride you, and I'd rather understand you than I never haven't tried to. All right, this week I am so enthused and honored, frankly, to be joined by my comrade, my colleague, my mentor, I don't know, Travis Williams. Travis, I don't even know how to properly introduce you because you have such a range of expertises and experiences. So tell the people a little bit about yourself. Who are you?
I'm a black man vegan, originally from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It's tough when I say originally, right? So I'm from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, but I was born, so maybe that's my origin story, but I consider origin story wherever, like, your most meaningful roots were set, right? But I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, did my undergraduate work at the Florida Agricultural and Mechanical University, home of the Mighty Rattlers, Orange and Green, 1887, October 3rd.
You love that shit.
I love my HBCU, you know what I mean? Check it out, Orange and Green.
You got the wristbands on and everything.
Oh yeah, you know, I always rep. And you know, my high school colors was orange and green as well.
So
because
whole,
our first football coach
thing.
Is also a Rattler. So, and I went to this high school called Blanche Lee High School, which was one of the two biggest black high schools in Broward County. And, you know, Broward is the most black, most Democrat county, or was when I was growing up in all of the state of Florida. And Miss Ely fought real hard to make sure that little black kids like me could get educated. And her home is now a museum. It's about maybe a 2-minute walk from my grandfather's house. So he passed away, but his old house. And so, that is that. I did my legal studies at the University of Georgia. Was a public defender for a long time. Had an epic mental breakdown. Found myself. Epic. Hey, if I'm going to do it, it's going to be epic.
Yo, we're going to do it big, baby. If we're going to break down, we're going to break it down.
Do it. Break everything. Break all the
windows. All down.
All the windows. And so found myself homeless and really suffering and in pain for about 2+ years. And in the last 5 years, I've been... I began reinvesting in community and community organizing. I've been doing organizing work since I was 15, you know. And so so over the last 5.5 or so, 6 years, been back doing that. And I've been fortunate enough to, you know, have been invited to speak at all these different universities and on these different things. And so... so it's not unfamiliar. And then, like, so now I do a lot of community education and political education at a grassroots level, aimed at mobilizing people, assisting them in organizing for political action. And so I also do work out of, I run this little ministry at a little medium-sized church. And my church is Covenant Presbyterian. My ministry is the Neighborhood Ministries, which is, it's two words that don't make sense until you know what it is we're doing. And so it's helping people stay housed, feeding people. I'm sitting in the fellowship hall now, and this is where we run the food pantry, a clothing closet. We're moving things out of here in trying to figure out a different model, but I also administer and manage our benevolence account, so helping people where they can and using Jesus's ministry with the poor to guide our efforts to assist people.
I noticed in all of that you somehow managed to not bring up hip-hop at all. You have no relationship
to
hip hop.
Nah, I love
hip hop. All this other dope shit is so dope that
love
it's not even worth bringing up. That not even bringing up that you yourself are a penman.
Well, you know,
you got some bars, man. What is this?
I had some records that at one time, you know, had some little heat to it. But I do love hip hop. But you know what though, I really don't listen to hip hop anymore. And it definitely not like sometimes I get nostalgic. And don't get me wrong, Royce da 5'9", even now, like the way he puts together a sentence is art, right? And I appreciate the art. And I listen here or there, you know, Fly God is an awesome God, West Side Gun, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Pray for Paris, what do you call it? Kamikaze. Like, I still listen to some sometimes, but, you know, it's tough, man. It's tough to listen to it. Some of the music, like, you know, I don't know. I feel like I think you and I have talked about this before. I think hip hop, I think any art form, right, has to have gatekeepers, right? Has to have people that make people do the work to get good at something, right? And hip hop has the least amount of gatekeepers, but it used to have the most, right? You had to run through, like when I was a kid trying to learn how to rap, you know what I mean? Like, I had to figure out how to rap, and then I had to be brave enough to rap on the school bus. And then people heard I could rap, and then it was like, you got to rap against this other guy who can rap. And then I'd go, you know what I mean? I'd be rapping at a crack house with some dope boy rappers about stuff. And then boom, boom, boom. And it's like all of this stuff, you get good at. You know what I mean? And now you don't got to put in no work. You don't got to do nothing. So you never really get better. You never really master the craft. You see what I'm saying? And so it's tough for me to listen to somebody who ain't even invested in mastering the craft.
So it does mostly come from a place of craftsmanship and not necessarily like from a place as an organizer and as someone that is pushing back against systems of capital and of racial capital, et cetera. Like the way that is all then shaping the genre and what ends up floating up to the surface is what we then consider mainstream. Does that at all influence like how you partake in hip hop
is it purely
the craftsmanship thing?
Well, let's think about what an album is, right? An album is 45 to an hour and some change worth.
What the hell album you listening to that's an hour long?
Albums used to be. Come on now.
I was reading recently that the last ten years, the top albums of the year in hip hop were all like 30 minutes long.
See, but that's weak, and you know I hate that. See, here's the thing.
See, but that's weak.
No, think about
no,
it.
No, no, Aquemini, no, no, no. Yeah, yeah.
Think about Aquemini, right?
Okay.
Aquemini
yeah.
by Outkast, undisputably an incredible record, right? Undisputable, right? So Aquemini, what did it take them 2-3 years to make that record?
Facts.
Let me see. Southern Playlist, it came out 93 or 94, maybe 95. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. 2 years later, you had AT Aliens, and then maybe 2 or 3 years later, you had Aquemini, right? And so in that 2 year time period, right? I heard Nas once say this in a source article from like maybe the late 90s. He said that first album is the easiest because it took you 18 years to write it, or 22 years to write it, however old you were, right? It's the hard albums is the next one because you don't have as much time to write, and the pressures change, your choice structure is different, your incentive structure is different, right? So when I look at like what an album generally people write songs about the highlights of their life, right? Like each song is a highlight or an amalgamation of highlights. So if you look at Marvin Gaye, I Want You, right? The record I Want You, incredible record. It's all about being in love and expressing that love intimately sexually, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful record. But these are all highlight sexual experiences. These aren't the ones that he had with.
This ain't like some random Thursday when he just got off work and brought home some Popeyes.
This ain't the one where his lady got woke up because the baby woke up. You know what I mean?
Right. This ain't.
It's just the highlights, right? So I expect someone to offer their highlights. But what used to be the highlights in hip hop music used to be the highlights of like liberation, right? And liberation, rejecting restrictions, right? And then now the highlights are, I don't know, transactional, monetary. Mm-hmm. It's like I can't handle that, right? Like it's just too much.
Yeah, and I feel like it's like, oh, we go out, we party every night. Oh, every night we out It's not. It isn't the highlights because it's like this is always chasing this,
this is
peak,
my life.
This pinnacle. This is my life. Like, we live like this. Like, I ain't slept in days. What's up?
Yeah. Like, I'm going to die. Like, help me, please.
I'm going to die. No, literally. Literally. Some of these cats be losing cats. We're losing cats out here.
For real.
This,
but it's
because
it's
of this
rough.
Push. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think that makes it tough because you can't be, you're not going to sit there and read some Kierkegaard and be listening to somebody. You know what I mean?
Why not?
Because it's just taking me out of my space, yo. Like, you know what I mean?
I mean, I feel like something that draws me to hip hop is that it is like it's like putting together a puzzle. Or no, it's like an impression. It's like an impressionist painting, right? So like, you start off all up close, and you see all of the lines, da da da. You're not really seeing the full picture or whatever. You know, you put it on in the background, and it's just like noise. And if you enjoy the noise, the cadence is good, whatever. You know, it's the ambiance, and then. With time, well, what I ideally seek out is that with time, you sort of like, oh, I got that metaphor. Oh, I just picked up on that punchline. Oh, that's hilarious how, you know, this analogy, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just saying you could potentially, there's probably people that do. For you, however, maybe take you out of it a little bit just because of the artistry. The artistry isn't there for you for some of these cats.
You know, I used to hate those punchline rappers. You know what I mean? Because it was just sorry and lazy, yo. Like, for the most part, most rappers aren't producing records that you can that can like suffice throughout different modes of a day, week, year, or lifetime, right? Mm-hmm. Every now and again, some are, and maybe you can put it together over the course of like a discography, right? Like I always say, Jadakiss is one of the few rappers that has bars that you can build a life off of, right? Like you can tell your kid to listen to this and they'll know how to live as a human, right? Everybody's a snake, so I got to keep the grass cut so I see them when they come and then I heat they up, right? Like, yeah. That's an incredible record. Like, be on your P's and Q's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He has those kind of bars. But for the most part, most of these guys, it just is the highlights and it's just too much. And then the young ladies, they just talking too much wild stuff. I took some vows about 4 years ago. You know what I mean? I don't need all that sexual energy in my life. I don't live that life. You know what I mean? Like all that, I'm going to the club. You know what I mean? I don't drink. I wake up at 4:30. I'm vegan. I drink water and tea. Like I want to listen to something that kind of is consistent with my lifestyle. Now I'm not being real if I'm listening to this.
I feel that.
And hip-hop taught me to be real.
Yes. Yes, indeed. So you may not be listening to like Pop Smoke while you read Kierkegaard, but what are you listening to while you read what?
Okay.
So what's your soundtrack? What's your soundtrack and what's your reading list right now?
Okay. So shout out to the homie Paul. He came to a session to a two part workshop I was doing with Represent Georgia and Black.
I was there. Now.
You were there.
I was on the Zoom. It was like a little date night. Like, oh, let's put it on. True like, that. Oh, let's watch Travis. He was sitting on the couch eating popcorn.
True that.
Yeah. It's, but he was in the chat asking you
questions.
Yeah,
he was in the chat.
Stuff.
He was actually in the chat. You know what
He's
I mean?
He's in the chat being mad nerdy asking questions about the
super
about
nerdy. But it was a good question. It was a dope question. You know what I mean? But like, so I'm coming fresh off of that. We finished it last night. So coming fresh off of that, like most of my reading has been about that, and I put together these little playlists, and you know, they've been sending the playlists out, people been subscribing to it, and that's cool, but it's mostly old school because that's mostly what I listen to. So I think Curtis by Curtis Mayfield, I've been bumping pretty hard lately. Abbey Road by the Beatles, I've been bumping real hard lately. Let me see, you know, I Want You by Marvin Gaye. And then Otis Redding has a song on the Soul album called Cigarettes and Coffee. Because, see, remember on them old school songs, them old black dudes and them old songs was really funny because they would always tell you what time of day the song was supposed to represent. It's early in the morning.
In the morning, son.
It's
I can't
late
say what that was. It's
the middle of the day. Sitting I just got off work.
The evening,
they always
home.
Telling you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they're at and like what time it is. I don't know why
like,
that's so
they
relevant
been
to
they
their writing
been careful.
Style.
Should have been
I don't
careful.
Know
why letting these white folks know, like, oh, he gonna be at the marina 7:15.
I don't know why it's so relevant to how they construct songs, but it always was like, it's just like when you listen to Stevie, right? Like Stevie, Songs in the Key of Life, Inner Visions, incredible records. And to me, all of this is hip-hop. Like, that's the beautiful thing about hip-hop, because name one of the artists that I mentioned that ain't been sampled by a classic hip-hop record. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Gapman, whoever. Right? But when you listen to Stevie, Stevie is always, for a blind man, is always referencing the seasons, and particularly season change, right? Which is interesting, because what he observes as a songwriter, what he communicates to us through his lyrics, is like he can see it. He's not talking about like the smell of autumn. Yeah. He's always talking about something you would have had to visually see, right? Like, it's wild, man, when you think about what he's saying. But so in preparing for that, been doing a, you know what? I will share a book list that I did with them. Reading? And this was pretty dope stuff. So the session was about power, right? So
yeah.
It was kind of a continuation.
If you
want
to
get into that,
if you want to talk to us a little bit about what you presented on, I think it'd be
that would be dope.
Get into it,
It was a session about power, which was kind of a offshoot of a conversation I was having with the Freedom Riders over at Ebenezer Baptist in maybe 2 months ago. So I was covering with them The Forms of Power by Thomas E. Wartenberg. This is an incredible record. Michel Foucault, Discipline and Punish, always, very deeply influential in the abolitionist movement. You and I have been always talking bond over that. The Struggle for Recognition by Axel Honneth. And you know, I'm always busting up neoliberalism. Undoing the Demos by Wendy Brown. No book captures it better. Really just a description of the ethos of neoliberalism. The Ethics of Identity by Kwame Anthony Appiah. It's some scholars doing some like critical thinking on identity. This guy, I think, takes the most comprehensive approach, maybe not the most critical in every way, maybe it's whatever. And then I also was covering with them The Unpolitics of Air Pollution by Matthew Crinson. And so The Unpolitics of Air Pollution is this case study that was published. Well, it covers a time from the 70s. I want to say it was published like in the late 70s. It was a relatively hard to find book. I mean, not really. It made it paperback. And so the case study is examines how the city of East Chicago versus Gary, Indiana. I don't know if you've ever been to Gary. Shout out to my dog, Freddie Gibbs. By the way, Alfredo.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
By the way, Alfredo. Look here. Alfredo ain't playing. Look at me. Look at me. Alfredo is on point. Shout out to Freddie Gibbs. And so The Unpolitics of Air Pollution covers how Gary versus how East Chicago handled the air pollution issue in the early 70s, right? Mm-hmm. And what this book really teaches us, which has become like such a key element to how I approach the most important elements to talk to others about from an educator, as an educator, is start a fight, right? Don't avoid a fight. Don't let these people get away with not putting their fists up against you. Make a real fight. Call questions to call things out. Like, really make a fight, because people are going to always try to dodge stuff. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, that commission you sit on, it's some wild stuff was happening in that other meeting when they was passing that bill, when y'all was passing the approval for the homeless encampment. That was some wild stuff people were saying, right? But they also was avoiding getting to the heart of the question, which is, you know, I wasn't going there to make no comment. It's just I'm listening to 3 hours of people saying crazy, wild stuff. Homeless people, lazy, nasty, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, and I'm so like, for context to the listeners, I may not have brought this up in an episode recently or got into detail on this, but in Athens, we recently going about coming up with a strategic plan for homelessness, you know, from starting with having a like sanctioned encampment for people who are experiencing criminalization for living outside, actually have a place where they can go, also as a hub for services, etc. But also, you know, working all the way through how do we want to build out our permanent supportive housing in Athens, etc., so that, you know, we address the actual issue, the fact that people ain't got no place to live. and not the quote unquote. And the thing is that was coming, that's coming up at that meeting was that people were perceiving homeless people as the problem, and not
homelessness.
Not that they were the product of the actual problem, which is capitalism, but you know that housing is not a human right.
You know, I think like that's the crazy thing, like making a fight happen, right? So
yeah.
So those books I had been spending a lot of time with. But on a normal year I read, you know, anywhere from 75 to 80 something books. This year I'm trying to hit 100, but I don't know if I'll really hit 100, but you know, I give it a shot.
Thing. Oh yeah, you slacking, you're not gonna hit 100? I'm ashamed of you.
Well,
that ends our conversation, Travis. I'm embarrassed by you for not reading 100 books. You're only going to read 80 in the year 2021. I'm very ashamed to know you.
My main thing is, like, am I using my time efficiently, right? Yeah. Like, am I being effective with my time? And, you know, we got to have downtime or whatever, but, like, I've dedicated my life to service, and it is deeply meaningful to me. And I have clear boundaries, so I don't need as much time as even some time I think. But, you know, I play outside. There's a couple things I think humans need, right? One of those is recreation, right? And I think you should play outside every day, right? And physicality helps me de-stress, right? Not necessarily like cardio or lifting or anything in particular, but physicality helps me de-stress. And so that's usually how I take on recreation, whether that's bike, whether that's walking, whether that's jogging, whether that's sprint, whether that's whatever. And, you know, people need meaningful vocation. I'm always engaged in meaningful vocation. People need education. These are different things I try to do every day. And over the course of the day, it gets pretty full. So with things being sometimes, if I read 80 to 120 pages a day, I should be able to tackle 100. You know what I mean? 75 is like normal, right?
Yeah.
And I just it's a lot that I wonder about justice. Like, you know, can a DA be progressive? Could restorative justice ever work? Am I being ridiculous about abolition, right? And that requires a lot of feeding myself with information and trying to think through.
What else do you think is like, so with regards to, you got into a little bit of like talking about the elements of a good life. Good vocation, opportunity to stimulate the mind, etc. So how much of, I'm really interested because you also operate this ministry. So how much of like, how do you see like provision of those both material, like the basics people need, and creation of these opportunities for people to thrive as a part of the organizing that needs to happen in order for us to push for power?
Well, you know, the ultimate question is this, right? So I always start with groups when talking to them about power, right, is to understand the difference between state, institutions, and people, right?
Yeah.
The state is this whole organized society, right? This our version of organized society, right? So the government. And this is something that, you know, you and I talked about a lot during the protests, but just to get people to understand it, stop saying that the state has a monopoly on violence. They have more than that. They have a monopoly on force, right? Force is a lot broader than just violence. In fact, Hannah Arendt says that, you know, where there's violence, there's not power. Where there's power, there's not violence. She argues that power is consensual, right? But that's not really relevant. But I'm just saying, like, it's more than just, you know, violence, right? Like, violence is a... You in a dysfunctional state. As a usually the state can use coercion to get us to do what they want us to do, right? They don't have to do all that. So getting people to understand that, and institutions are, they mediate the needs of the people and the interests of the state, right? The interests of the state are usually protection, conservation, hence the term conservative, right? That's usually the interests of the state, and institutions mediate. And then the people, people hear the term the multitude, right? That's like a melting pot type term. But the people is persons working together or represented together or viewed together, right? We just got the new census stuff came out yesterday. And, you know, look around in these districts in Georgia, look at the shrinking districts, there a lot of the big time white power players in the General Assembly districts are shrinking for a lot of different reasons. Number one, the point in time is August 2020. What was going on? COVID. You know what I mean? Or, right. You know, April 2020 or whatever the specific one is. So you got some of that going. But you think that, I mean, obviously the census informs the gerrymandering or informs the redistricting, which becomes gerrymandering as a you know, systemic manipulation on us. And so I just, you know, I don't know. I went off on a tangent.
It's all good. It's all but good. Yeah. So talking about like,
I'm stream of consciousness. You know that.
Stream of consciousness. I'm talking about, yeah. So like the material, providing the material supports for people to then build like various kinds of power. And you got into like, well, what is, like, where is power? Power is not just agitating for the state to do this or that. It's institutional power as well. Yeah.
And it's completely relational, right? You only have power in relation to something else. Ideally in the social world, other people. Right? But like, if you're living on a deserted island or a void, let's say that you live in a void where it's just white walls, white shoes, no, you can't even perceive clothes because you've never seen clothes. There is no power. Power can't be had in an empty void of nothing. Now you pop in another person into that void, and because you know the secret place in the void where you can sneak in and be around black light instead of white light, you have power of information that you could use to coerce, influence, and even force that person to do stuff, right? So it's completely relational, you know. And so when I'm thinking about like even the work I do in these different spheres, whether it be with the church or Chester community or just general activism or as a writer or educator, what worries me most sometimes is the work is charitable work through organizations, churches, or anything of the sort, right? Because we run the risk of the charity like giving government a dodge to not do nothing. Mm-hmm. Right? Oh, the charity's gonna feed them. Nah, that's the work of the government. Yo, the state's supposed to take care of you. I don't know what y'all think this state is supposed to do. You know what I mean? They want the state to just be like administrative bureaucracy to help them get to exploit new students or new workers or whatever. It's like, this is all crazy. You know what I mean?
In the time we got left, this comes out on the on Thursdays generally. So what kind of...
I know when your podcast come out, man.
I don't know if you listen to the show, man. You got eight books to read, bruh. So.
You went on that hiatus and it messed me up.
Oh, did it now?
It did.
Oh, no. I'll be nervous you listen to the show. I'm like, shit, Travis is probably thinking I'm a dumbass. Like, what's she talking about this week?
Nah, you know what?
Oh, shit.
Sometimes I be wanting you to really get into it. You know what I mean?
I know.
I know, but you know what I mean? It's a different approach, right? Like, yeah. I want to see more granular stuff, you know what I mean? But I love what y'all doing.
But actually, I'm going to ask a different question than I was planning to. So you went over a lot of different books that you've been reading or planning on engaging with. You know, with the... Oh, so what would you say right now is the most urgent thing you would like a listener to go out and read, and why? Like, why is that particular piece of political analysis really, really salient and urgent in the moment we're in?
I would probably say... The first thing anybody has to do, I think, is always consider... what is justice, right? Like, you know, it's generally the first question I start out with, what is justice, right? And you, to answer that question, I think you have to answer a bunch of other questions, right? But I think someone needs to start out, like, it'll be young men, young women, you know what I mean? Sometimes my age who want to come and collaborate. They're like, can I come hang around, find something to do? And I'm like, all right, we'll go. Read this, read that, read this, right? And a lot of times I try to start them with Are Prisons Obsolete? By Angela Davis to just... incredible book. Really the source of my of kind of my anchoring in the abolitionist movement, the abolitionist struggle. Golden Gulag is also an incredible work, but by Ruth Gilmore. And so I would say start there to begin to understand the how different systems interplay with one another and to ask yourself questions that we take for granted, right? Like prisons, as we understand them, ain't been around that long. Did you know that? Probably not. Okay. So you don't take that for granted. We can, prison was an innovation, right? Prison was the innovation.
Prison was an innovation. That was them stepping up and saying, oh, let's do things differently. Let's be a little bit more.
We gotta stop hanging people in the courtyard.
Leaving people in the stocks and shit is kind of fucked up, bro. Yeah.
That's too much. We're gonna do
that. If we were capable of making that transition, we are capable of transitioning away.
Of a new innovation, right? And so I would say start there. I would say Spheres of Justice by Michael Walzer. I would say start there. I would say if somebody is really interested in digging into some heavy work, those are the places to start and kind of think through those. But I would say the best education is feeding yourself through that information, but also being out here in the streets, because what you see is you see all this suffering and all this pain. This week, 100 families came through, more than 100 families came through the food pantry, right? This week, one social worker at the schools, one essentially homeless outreach social worker at Advantage, and another just kind of random person all reached out with families who are in desperate need of housing. Fortunately, because of the support that our congregation gives to this particular ministry, and then just generally, we were able to help them, right? But like, we didn't have to, you know what I mean? Like, they could have been out there. I could have never found out. They could have never found out. The people that reached out could have never found out. So being out there in the street and seeing this and you know, seeing the suffering, I think is incredibly informational, particularly when you put it with the book, right? When you put it with this book or that book or kind of thinking through those. But I would say that's what I would say.
I appreciate you bringing us back to practice, not just like, oh, just reading about it, but actually being about it.
You gotta look. If you're not really, really doing it, you know what I mean? It feels different. It's like if you only recording songs in your room, and then like let's say they popping on the internet, people are listening to your songs, but you've never performed them, right? You have a whole different set of expectations for how you want the beat to sound, how you want to mix the sound. Do you want, like, it, you know, I don't know if you saw that Lox Dipset battle or whatever versus. I didn't watch it. I watched a couple clips, but that's because Kevin, shout out to Sun Tzu, was bugging me about the thing because he loved them battles. And so I took a look at it. And it's crazy because Dipset was performing with the vocals on the track. Like, dude, what are you doing? This ain't, you know, Jada was saying this ain't hip hop, and it ain't, right? But your expectations for like even what your songs need to be are different once you start performing. You know what I mean? How many times you done seen somebody at first show and they froze? They was tough guy on the mic, and now they froze, right? Because it's a whole different element.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I love that analogy. Perfect way to end off our conversation. Travis, can people get in touch with you? Is there a way people can stay in touch if they want to?
Absolutely, they can email me. I teach at a lot of different places with a lot of different Black organizations and justice-minded organizations in the region. I can't think of anything right now because a lot of dates are up in the air. But they can email me at thewilliamsproject@gmail.com. That's T-H-E, Williams like my last name, W-I-L-I-A-M-S. Project, P-R-O-J-E-C-T, in the projects at gmail.com. So the Williams Project at gmail.com.
Stay in touch with the kid.
Waiting on Reparations is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.